it feels very surreal. I've been out since I was 17, and I had no idea this day would come in my lifetime.
The first same-sex couples apply for marriage licenses in Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, October 13th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, groups push to mobilize more Alaska Native voters.
We have a power at the polls to make a difference just in terms of the sheer numbers of Alaska Native people, provided we turn out to vote.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. And by BP Alaska, committed to the state of Alaska through investment, production, and jobs for future generations of Alaskans. More at alaska.bp.com.
A federal judge decided yesterday that Alaska's same-sex marriage ban was unconstitutional. The state of Alaska started accepting applications for gay marriages this morning, but the state's attorney general is asking for a stay on that legal decision, which would put a hold on actually issuing any licenses. KSKA's Ann Hillman reports.
Courtney Lim and Stephanie Pearson were part of the lawsuit seeking to overturn the gay marriage ban. They were first in line in Anchorage to apply for a license.
Do you have an application?
Yes.
Okay.
Between giggles, they took the oath and planned to pick up their license as soon as they could after the state's mandatory 3-day waiting period. That would be 8 a.m. on Thursday morning.
What time is your wedding scheduled?
8:30.
Lamb and Pearson were joined at the front of the line by Anne Marie Garber and her fiancé.
It feels very surreal. I've been out since I was 17, and I had no idea this day would come in my lifetime.
But whether or not the day actually comes depends on the state's appeal for a stay. Attorney General Michael Garrity says the ban should not be lifted yet because the law is in a state of flux.
The cases around the country have kind of gone off on different tangents in terms of finding these laws unconstitutional. It's a bit of a smorgasbord, and that's why I think ultimately the U.S. Supreme Court is going to have to accept the case and decide this issue once and for all.
The motion says a stay is in order, quote, to avoid chaos in the administration of Alaska's marriage laws pending ultimate resolution of this fundamental issue. Garrity says the state wants a larger panel of Ninth Circuit judges to hear the case. He says they're hopeful because some judges in other circuits have stated that they interpret same-sex marriage bans as constitutional. Carl Tobias is a professor of constitutional law at the University of Richmond and has been closely following same-sex marriage cases around the country. He says he doesn't think the state has any new arguments to make.
So I think it's very much a long shot in terms of what is being argued in this day. And I don't think it reflects the reality on the ground from what we know right now.
Christopher Ruff married his husband in California years ago and applied for an Alaska marriage license this morning. He says the governor's appeal reflects badly on the state.
It's a little embarrassing on the state to have them codify discrimination in law and try and hold it. And I'm embarrassed with Parnell right now still continuing to say they want to hold it after the courts have said straight out that it's degrading and discriminating. I forget his exact words, but they were pretty harsh.
Ruff says they applied for a license immediately because they're afraid the state will take away their rights again. Judge Timothy Burgess will rule on the state's request. If the stay is denied, then licenses could be issued on Thursday. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
Following the federal court decision overturning Alaska's ban on same-sex marriage, the major candidates for governor are sparring over the appropriate response. Governor Sean Parnell's spokesperson sent out a press release shortly after the ruling, announcing that his administration would appeal the U.S. District Court decision. In it, Parnell stated he had a, quote, duty to defend and uphold the law and the Alaska Constitution. Less than an hour later, his campaign sent out a blast asking if political rival Bill Walker will defend Alaska's Constitution. Campaign spokesperson Luke Miller says Parnell's immediate decision separates him from Walker on the issue.
He is not willing to defend the Alaska Constitution in this regard, and I think it's a decision before Alaskans.
Walker, who has previously sought office as a Republican but is running as an unaffiliated candidate, responded that he would need time to review the court's opinion before making a decision to appeal. He says while he believes marriage should be between a man and a woman, he thinks it's unwise to pursue expensive litigation that has little chance of victory. And he shot back at the governor for what he sees as an unfair attack, given that Parnell has in the past supported a constitutional amendment to allow public funding of private schools.
I do take exception that Governor Parnell's assertion that I wouldn't be a defender of the Constitution, when in fact he's not only not a defender, he's actually attempted to change the Constitution.
Walker's running mate, Democrat Byron Mallott, is supportive of same-sex marriage. Walker says he has not yet had a detailed conversation with Mallott on the matter. With same-sex couples applying for marriage licenses across the state, the office that processes those documents made sure new applications were ready to go this morning. From Juneau, KTOO's Lisa Fu has more.
Couples applying for marriage licenses in Alaska have been presented with new gender-neutral forms.
Before it was bride and groom, now it's just party A, party B.
Philip Mitchell is head of the Bureau of Vital Statistics with the State Division of Public Health. When making the new form, he looked at marriage license applications in other states where same-sex marriage is legal, like Oregon, Washington, and Minnesota. He admits the new form is somewhat impersonal and says it could change in the next couple of days.
They could check on the bridegroom or spouse. And so then you could have a groom-groom marriage, spouse-spouse, bride-bride, and that would allow each couple to customize this as it best fit their circumstances.
Mitchell was listed as a defendant in the court case challenging Alaska's ban on gay marriage, but he knows how important the decision is to same-sex couples in the state.
Before, there was no legal document that tied them together for end-of-life decisions, medical care, and retirement and things like that. From that perspective, I think that's good for those people who weren't able to get married before in Alaska and now they can.
The state has Bureau of Vital Statistics offices in Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks. Couples in other communities can apply for marriage licenses at a local court. Mitchell says other state forms will also need to be changed.
I hate to rain on everybody's parade, but people who get married also get divorced, and our divorce certificate at some time will need to be changed to reflect more gender-neutral terminologies.
Mitchell says he's unsure what will happen to the marriage license application if the state is successful in its appeal to the judge's ruling. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
A new report details the challenges involved in providing health care to rural communities in Alaska. The study concludes there is a lack of professional expertise in the state's smaller communities. The report, called Alaska's Community Capacity Review, a statewide public health system assessment, also notes that an aging healthcare workforce is a challenge as well. State Health Promotion Manager Jane Andreen, who worked on the report, says there's a need for mentors to counter an aging workforce. The report says northern and southwest regions of the state are most lacking in healthcare providers. The report was released on October 1st. It's based on a performance review of the public health system earlier this year. Over the last few months, the nonpartisan Get Out the Native Vote has made a big push to mobilize Native voters across the state. Roughly one in five potential voters in the state is Alaska Native. As KUAC's Emily Schwing reports, a number of Native organizations have signed on to help with the movement.
For as long as she can remember, Sarah Obed has been heavily involved in the election process.
In fact, I was in the Peace Corps in a remote outer island in the South Pacific, and I voted absentee. So yes, I pride myself on my voting history.
Obed now works as the Vice President of External Affairs for Doyon Limited. In Interior Alaska, the Native Corporation partners with Tanana Chiefs Conference and the Fairbanks Native Association on a nonpartisan effort to encourage Alaska Natives and tribal members to vote.
In Alaska particular, there's a huge population of Alaska Natives. That we have a power at the polls to make a difference just in terms of the sheer numbers of Alaska Native people, provided we turn out to vote.
In July, the Alaska Federation of Natives reported the addition of 128 absentee and early voting polling places in villages across the state. AFN, along with the Association of Alaska Regional Native Corporation Leaders and Get Out the Native Vote, agreed to work with the State Division of Elections to establish the sites. In the Interior region this summer, Get Out the Native Vote volunteers registered or updated information for more than 200 people. That's down about 100 voters from 2012, but Obed doesn't seem to mind.
Maybe it's because we were very effective in 2012 that we had less people registering, updating their information this year.
Statewide, Get Out the Native Vote has registered more than 1,200 shareholders and tribal members this year, but the organization is still awaiting a final count. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, leaders gather in Bethel to discuss rural, state, and federal concerns.
When we talk about that we have major fights that are going on with the state of Alaska and we're trying to protect our people's rights on that, it's very real.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
A nearly completed British Columbia mine in the Stikine River watershed is expected to begin full production at the end of this month. Meanwhile, protesters blocking access to the controversial Red Chris mine may be forced out tomorrow. KSTK's Katerina Sestarek has more.
Imperial Metals owns the Mount Polly mine in eastern British Columbia, where an August tailings dam break spilled an estimated 2 billion gallons of silty water into the Fraser River watershed. Now Imperial's Red Chris mine, near the southeast Alaska border, is raising concerns with groups on both sides of the border. The Klabona Keepers, a group of Tahltan First Nation members living near that mine, are blockading its access road. Red Chris's owners were recently granted a temporary injunction against the blockade. But Klabona Keepers spokesperson Rhoda Kwok says that order is still a victory.
For one, the companies usually walk into the courtroom. They get their court injunction and they get their enforcement order. What they didn't count on that we had people in Vancouver to go into the courtroom and challenged it. And they didn't got their enforcement order that day.
The Red Chris copper and gold mine is in the Stikine River watershed, upriver from Wrangell and Petersburg. Groups on both sides of the border are worried its tailings dam might be too similar to the one that spilled contaminated water and sediment into the Fraser River system. For now, Klabona Keepers protesters continue blockading at the mine. When the enforcement order goes into effect, the police can act on the injunction and force them to leave. An earlier blockade of the mine ended with an agreement between the Klabona Keepers, Imperial Metals, and the Tahltan Central Council. Protesters left the mine in August when Imperial Metals agreed to pay for an independent review of the Red Chris tailings dam. The Tahltan Central Council chose the reviewer. British Columbia won't issue the final permits for the tailings dam until the review is complete. It's still pending, but protesters returned 2 weeks ago. Kwok says the blockade went back up after the group learned more about the impact of the Mount Polly Dam breach.
Red Chris is only 18 kilometers from our community. And not only that, once the dam break, it's going to go into Klapan. Klapan goes into Stikine. That will affect our salmon. And it will also affect everyone downstream. It'll affect their salmon.
Vancouver-based Imperial Metals did not respond to requests for an interview. In its injunction application, the company states, Red Chris has been forced to severely limit its construction activities at the project site, and if the blockade continues, will be forced to halt them altogether. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Katerina Sestarek.
When Alaskans vote for governor on November 4th, they'll also be deciding the fate of Medicaid expansion in the state. Incumbent Governor Sean Parnell has said he won't expand the federal health insurance program under the Affordable Care Act. But his opponent, independent candidate Bill Walker, says if elected, he will immediately accept the federal money. APRN's Annie Fite reports.
A year ago, Governor Parnell called a press conference at his office in downtown Anchorage to announce the state wouldn't accept Medicaid expansion.
I believe a costly Medicaid expansion, especially on top of the broken Obamacare system, is a hot mess.
Under the Affordable Care Act, states can expand Medicaid to offer health coverage to residents making up to 133% of the federal poverty level. In Alaska, the people who would qualify are mostly low-income, childless adults. The federal government pays for 100% of their coverage through 2016. That match rate gradually ramps down to 90% by 2020. At his campaign headquarters in Midtown Anchorage, Parnell said expansion just doesn't make sense.
To think that we can take new federal funds for Medicaid and that we'll continue to get them is a false hope. The existing Medicaid system is already unsustainable federally and from the state perspective by any measure. And to add additional, to add weight to that in terms of adding more burden on the system, on an already unsustainable system, that just doesn't make sense to me.
More than 40,000 Alaskans would have qualified for Medicaid expansion, according to a report Parnell commissioned on the issue. He says about a quarter of those people fall into a gap. They don't have access to tribal health services, and they earn too little to qualify for subsidies to purchase insurance on healthcare.gov. The Affordable Care Act assumed they would have coverage through Medicaid expansion. Parnell says he wants to find another way to help those Alaskans. The Medicaid Reform Advisory Group will give him recommendations on how to do that in mid-November. Parnell says he would even consider buying private insurance for Alaskans who fall into the gap with dollars from the state general fund.
That would be the state saying, we think this is in our people's interest to do it, and we're willing to pay for it. That's a whole different scenario than becoming addicted to billions of dollars more in federal funds across the next 4 years or so, 5 years. And it's a pipe dream to think that once we go down that road that we could ever go back.
Parnell says he doesn't want to add to the federal deficit. But independent candidate Bill Walker says it's a no-brainer for Alaska to take the federal money for Medicaid expansion, at least while it's funded at 100%.
We receive a lot of funds from the federal government on a highway, a 50-50 matching grant for a highway. Boy, we can't build that fast enough. And yet here we are receiving, you know, potentially 100% from the federal government on health care for Alaskans. And we're saying, oh, no, we can't take that risk because maybe they'll fund it less at a later day. Really? So are we putting the importance of a highway higher than somebody's health care?
Walker says he would revisit the issue when the federal match begins declining in 2017. Walker was a registered Republican until early September when he switched his affiliation to independent to run with Lieutenant Gubernatorial candidate Byron Malott on the Alaska First Unity ticket. The states that have opted for expansion are mostly led by Democrats, while those that have refused are overwhelmingly led by Republicans. But Walker doesn't think the decision should be political.
We should be looking at doing everything we can to bring down the cost of health care in Alaska to as many people as possible. And we're playing politics with somebody's health care, and I don't believe in that.
Walker points out that Medicaid expansion is supported by tribal groups, business organizations like the Alaska Chamber of Commerce, and hospitals. He says he's heard a lot of concern from voters about the issue, too, especially in rural Alaska. Walker says it's a topic even insured Alaskans have a stake in because health insurance premiums are so high here.
When 10 or 26 or 40,000 Alaskans, pick a number, go and receive health care at the emergency room and aren't able to pay for it, no, that's our premiums are based upon that kind of stuff. And so it would bring down the... no question, bring down the health care costs for everybody across the board.
If elected, Walker could expand Medicaid without approval from the legislature, but it would be up to lawmakers to appropriate any state funds necessary to run the program. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Fite.
With weeks before the November election, the Sullivan campaign has come to Bethel. KYUK's Ben Matheson has more.
As former Attorney General and Natural Resources Commissioner Dan Sullivan works to unseat incumbent Senator Mark Begich, he's yet to visit the YK Delta in his year-long campaign, but he plans to soon. In the meantime, his wife, Julie Fate Sullivan, was here on his behalf last week to introduce her husband to Southwest Alaska voters. Despite a career spent in urban Alaska and Washington, D.C., Faith Sullivan says her husband first connected with the state at her family's Yukon fish camp.
And, you know, 24 years ago, that's the first place I ever brought him to get up there and work with all of us. So that's the first Alaska, the part of Alaska that Dan ever came to know and love, long before Anchorage or even Fairbanks. Of course, we'd pop into Fairbanks to pick up supplies and whatnot. But so he's got a very deep respect and an understanding of rural Alaska more than most people know.
Faith Sullivan is Koyukon Athabascan and has deep connections in the state. She's worked as a journalist and as a staffer for the late Senator Ted Stevens. Her mother was the first female co-chair of the Alaska Federation of Natives. And Sullivan also had the support of a powerful surrogate in Bethel, Senator Lisa Murkowski, who's filmed one commercial for him.
I need a partner in the Senate who will work to advance Alaska's interests, not the Obama agenda.
Faith Sullivan accompanied Murkowski to the Association of Village Council Presidents convention in Bethel last Tuesday. Murkowski addressed the convention during her visit, but also fit in some campaigning for Sullivan. Senator Begich also addressed the AVCP convention and campaigned in Bethel. The national implications of the race are not lost on the outside donors pouring millions into the race. If Republicans take 6 seats from Democrats this November, they'll control the Senate. Murkowski, as the ranking member of the Senate's Energy and Interior Appropriations Committee, would become chair, and that becomes part of her campaign pitch.
We stand to gain a great deal from the seniority position and the chairmanship position that I would hold. So I think that that's something that Alaskans should consider as they look at this race.
Alaska's rural vote was essential to Murkowski's successful 2010 write-in campaign. But to connect with rural voters, Murkowski says candidates have to be here in person.
There's no substitute for being on the ground with the people and being part of the people.
Although Sullivan was not part of the people at the region's largest gathering of tribal leaders last week, sending his wife as a proxy was a first step.
It's an understanding, a better understanding of who he is. We're a family, obviously. And so when people recognize that not only am I born and raised in Alaska, but I'm Alaska Native, there's a better understanding because, like I said, there's a lot of misinformation put out there.
Sullivan is set to be on the ground in Bethel on Friday, October 17th. Where he's scheduled to speak at the Chamber of Commerce luncheon, among other campaign activities. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Raven Alaska, navigating Alaska's challenging terrain, serving more than 100 communities statewide. Details at raven.com. Raven Alaska, soaring above.
A state court judge says ride-sharing company Uber cannot offer transportation for hire in Alaska's largest city unless it complies with a local ordinance. Superior Court Judge Michael Corey issued an order today barring the company from charging people for rides in Anchorage unless it uses regulated vehicles and otherwise complies with municipal law regarding for-hire vehicles. Corey ruled in a case brought by the municipality of Anchorage. Uber provides a smartphone app that allows people to order rides in privately driven cars instead of taxis. Corey, in his order, said Uber had not been charging riders for transportation it arranged, but had the capability to charge at any time before his ruling. A phone listing for an Uber attorney rang unanswered this afternoon. Leaders from around the state gathered in Bethel last week for the 50th annual Association of Village Council Presidents Convention. KYUK's Daisha Eaton has the story.
The Association of Village Council Presidents Convention opened at the Cultural Center in Bethel Tuesday. Julie Kitka, president of the Alaska Federation of Natives, was the keynote speaker. She reported on 2 major wins in the courts for Alaska Natives this year, highlighting a federal judge's order that the state of Alaska translate voting materials into Gwich'in and Yupik for Alaska Natives with limited English.
When we talk about that we have major fights that are going on with the state of Alaska and we're trying to protect our people's rights on that, it's very real. It's sad that we have to do that, but we're very proud of these Native individuals that testified as witnesses and that the judge listened and saw the truth of what they were saying.
Kitka also noted a U.S. Supreme Court decision to end the Katie John subsistence case after 19 years of litigation as another victory. AVCP is a nonprofit organization representing the 56 federally recognized tribes of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. During the convention, tribal representatives meet in Bethel to work on critical issues. Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski and Republican Representative Don Young also addressed the convention. Senator Murkowski said that the federal and state governments need to respect Native rights.
There's so much tension as we talk about things like jurisdiction, as we talk about our ability, your ability to govern yourselves. And I think the tension comes because we're missing that respect. That respect from the federal government and the state government, respecting you and your tribal institutions and you as a people.
Representative Young also encouraged Native villages to take initiative to improve their own communities, especially when it comes to drugs. He said improving economic opportunities for young people is one important part of fighting the region's drug problems, but he also said it will take confronting people they know who are selling drugs.
If someone's screwing up in your village, he should be asked to leave. You don't want to do that. It can't be just enforced from the outside, because very frankly, that's a foreigner. It has to come from here. And you know who the drug dealer is in that town. You all know who it is. Well, you say, I can't do it. Bullshit, you can't do something. It gets damn cold without a cabin. I'm saying there has to be a little bit of control. And those villages, especially with drugs, this black heroin, what do you call black tar stuff is coming in, is destroying our young people.
The AVCP convention runs through Thursday afternoon. In Bethel, I'm Daisha Eaton.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ann Hillman in Anchorage, Lisa Fu in Juneau, Emily Schwing in Fairbanks, Katarina Sestarik in Wrangell, and Ben Matheson and Daisha Eaton in Bethel. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez and Annie Fight reported from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Aldrin. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. Craig Taylor Equipment Company, an authorized dealer for over 15 manufacturers, including John Deere and Bobcat, celebrating 60 years of business in Alaska. More at craigtaylorequipment.com. And by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Ready to quit smoking, using e-cigarettes or other tobacco? Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free, confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online, and now introducing Text to Quit. Text to Quit helps you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.